You're listening to Michelle Redfern and Mel Butcher on Lead to Soar, bringing you the best leadership advice and mentorship from around the world. Learn more at leadtosoar.com.
Welcome to Lead to Soar. I'm Mel Butcher, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Michelle Redfern, and Erica Jefferson. Welcome, ladies.
Great to be here.
Thank you. Always great to be here with you amazing ladies.
Yes, we'll have some fun today. So this is another episode in our series, speaking to executive leaders and HR leaders. And today we want to talk about recruitment. Erica, you and I have talked about this a little bit, and there's some problems in the recruiting world, and I don't think we're going to solve them all with AI. So I want to start with a couple of numbers first before we get down into some of the challenges, let's say. So according to HubSpot, 85% of jobs are filled through networking, people-to-people connection. According to CNBC, 70% of jobs are never published publicly. So I'm bringing this up because I just want to acknowledge that the majority of jobs, we do it through people. And so this other part that we're talking about is all of the jobs that we were not able to fill through referrals and people recommending other people or people in your company knowing someone to bring in. So we've got this other percentage, which is probably 25% or less of the jobs out there. So that's where we are. Let me just open it with, what are some of the challenges that you have seen with the way that recruiting is done?
Well, I'll start off by saying, for some reason, the whole industry is treating the concept of finding talent, not purple squirrels, not unicorns, but talent, people who can do the work day in and day out, as an episode of The Hunger Games. So they believe that you have to put people through this horrific process to prove that they want a job that you're then going to try to lowball them to take. And I just say, you know what? What happened to personnel, right? What happened to personnel where Martha and Betty knew enough about the business that could say, you know what? I know you don't have all the skills, but based on our conversation, it sounds like you have some transferable skills that allow you to pick things up quickly and you can do the job. These folks who want folks to not even figure out where the bathrooms are on the first day, but instead want them to start on day one, by noon, you should already be bringing in millions of dollars, is unrealistic and is why people are complaining that they cannot find talent. And like I said, you're putting people through 10 and 11 and 12 rounds of interviews. And then for nothing, you had an internal candidate the whole time. So you wasted these folks' time. You could have hired and been on their way contributing to the organization, but you drug this process out unnecessarily. And I'm sure as a former hiring manager, I would not be pleased. There needs to be a revolution, just similar to how awful cabs, if anybody remembers how awful cabs used to be. Cabs used to be terrible. They wouldn't pick you up or overcharge you or were rude. And then Lyft and Uber came on the scene and all of a sudden, hello, good morning. Would you like a Coke? I was like, wow, this is the nicest cab I've ever been in. So we need an overhaul of the entire recruiting ecosystem session, how we recruit, who recruits, just a complete overhaul.
Hello, listeners. Michelle here. What you couldn't see is me roaring with laughter, as Erica said, The Hunger Games. But I kind of had a few tears in there as well, because it's so true. And I also want executives listening to this to say, you pay millions of dollars to build brand equity so people buy stuff from you, so people invest in your organization. And guess what? The people who are contributing to your organization, your employees and your potential employees are being left out of that equation, because your brand is on the line the minute a recruiter contacts potential candidate. And as someone who has been a candidate and been through many, many experiences, both at, you know, really, I guess, at managerial and then right through to executive and now board level, I can tell you the process is shit. And recruiters, by and large, have failed time and time again to protect your brand equity. Mel, I have just been through a process for a board role. It was terrible. And I now think very, very poorly of the organization that I wanted to contribute to because of the way, as a candidate, I was treated. And guess what? There would have been, well, I understand, hundreds of other people like me who are treated that way. So you're right. It is treating us as candidates like an episode or, you know, the Hunger Games. And executives, is that really how you want your organization to be perceived? When you don't have market power, particularly if you are in an area where there are skill shortages, hello, you know, you can name an industry now and say, oh my God, talent hard to get. So if it's hard to get, why aren't you absolutely, as you said, Erica, revolutionizing the way you do candidate care? Because this is the stuff we need to call it. We need to call it candidate care because your brand is on the line. I cannot be stronger in saying get this right, because by and large, it's wrong at the moment.
Yeah, I would add the language that your recruiting is part of your marketing. It becomes part of your brand equity. So I had an experience just in the last 24 hours of getting a call from a third-party recruiter, and they told me all about how important this position is, how strategic. And I asked, oh, okay, great. Can you tell me what company this is for? Oh, no, I can't disclose that. I can, you know, give them your resume. And if they want to talk to you, then I can share who it is. And I was like, oh, all right. Well, thanks for the conversation. And then this recruiter turned right around and asked if I would refer for free an engineering PM to him. And I said, no, no, I will not.
I don't know if I could have been as succinct with my response. So I'm proud of you, Bill. I am proud of you.
This kind of behavior is a problem with your in-house recruiters, your third-party recruiters. It's not okay. And the next part is AI is not going to solve that either.
In fact, Mel, this is the sausage factory, rubbish in, rubbish out. So if we're pumping the current experiences and tools and procedures into AI to say this is the way to do recruitment, guess what? We're just going to perpetuate and, in fact, industrialize this experience. And again, my call to action for executives is that really how you want your brand to be perceived? Because this is such a big deal. And this is not just a thing that's happened just recently. This has been, you know, from time immemorial, since almost, you know, volume recruitment and external recruitment companies became a thing. And we lost the personnel department, as you said, Erica, quite rightly. I ran call centers for a long, long time. So volume recruitment in call centers was just part of what we do. And, you know, I look back and I think, oh, crumbs, I wish I'd known then what I know now, when I think of some of the assessment centres that we'd run, which probably were like the Hunger Games for some of those poor people. I'm so sorry. A retrospective apology to everyone who's ever fronted up to one of my call centres to be hired, because I think we were a bit shit. But the point I'm making is scarce to find talent, and not even scarcity, because let's not let scarcity be our mindset. This is a real mindset shift for executives and everyone through the talent management pipeline. When we look at our employee experience across the entire life cycle, what do we want that to be? We spend, I would dare say, millions of dollars. Well, we would, society, workplaces, business spends millions of dollars on creating employee experiences, employee value propositions. But I don't see in the attract bucket some real deliberate strategies and engagement with third-party providers, because sometimes there's, particularly in volume recruitment, we can't have everyone in-house doing recruitment, blah, blah, blah. But certainly we need to engage those people in saying, hey, here's our strategy as the organisation. Here's what's going to make us competitive in our marketplace. Here's what's going to help this organisation grow. As our talent sourcing partners, in-house and external, you need to be aware of that and be mirroring our brand, be embodying what it is that we represent to potential candidates. And that is a real gap. And I certainly see that gap in my DEI work. When I'm talking about a DEI strategy that has to be embedded through every component of the organisation, I'll often say, now, how are we going to bring procurement on board? How are we going to bring talent on board? Because they are also, they need to embody this strategy when they're talking to external parties, because they need to get it as well. So this is a strategic talent management play to protect and grow your brand.
Yeah. While you were talking there, Michelle, it reminded me of a company I heard about. And let me preface this by saying, if you're an engineering manager out there or technical type person out there listening to this, I'm going to make you very uncomfortable with what I'm about to suggest. My point is that sometimes we need to think outside the box and we need to see examples that help us think outside the box. So there's a company that makes all of the brownies for Ben and Jerry's ice cream, and they practice open hiring. And so what that means is if somebody wants a job baking brownies, they can put their name down on a list, and whenever they get to a point where they need to hire someone, they go to the list and pick the person off the top of the list to call. And if they're still available, they get the job. There's not an interview process. There's not some cultural screening or whatever. They just get the job. Now, I can already hear the resistance around, well, that wouldn't work in a space like engineering because of these credentials and that credential. That's bullshit. You can set a list up that requires, I don't know, a Bachelor of Science in civil engineering. And for your entry level position, how much more do you need than someone who has your bare minimum credential and wants to fucking work?
100%. And, you know, I've had a couple of managers through my career who say, Michelle, you can hire skill, but you hire the will and you teach the skill. This is where AI is useful. It can just sift through. Have you got the prerequisite? But the prerequisites, tick, yep, away you go. And this is a high trust business. So we trust. First of all, we give you our trust rather than, hey, you have to earn our trust. You have to earn our respect around here. We trust you. You are coming into this organization to bake cookies. And we trust you that you will do that. And we're also going to do all of the stuff that enables you to reach your greatness, which is we're going to train you. We're going to give you the right tools and ingredients and support and have a nice workplace, blah, 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 blah. All the stuff we talk about, the employee experience. But that's the basis of it. We're going to trust that you are the right person. And sure, you're going to have mechanisms to manage performance on the way through. But I would argue, and, you know, I've been a hiring manager. I will have hired thousands of people in my time, albeit as I now look, not very well. But anyway, and of those thousands of people that I've hired, do you know how many I've had to actually sack? Less than 10, and probably less than 5 if I think about it. Because you do stuff to help people reach their greatness. I love that example, Mel. What do you think, Erica?
I think somewhere along the way, recruiting and maybe HR in general has become a safe space for mean girls. And where their loyalty really is to the organization and making sure, to your point, that the organization gets the talent that it needs. Now it's a fiefdom. I'm in charge of this. So I'm going to be the one that's going to make sure that the person is the right fit. And I say this, and when I say this, I don't say it with any snideness, but how are you interviewing me for a job in chemical engineering and you have a degree in napkin folding? How is it that you are evaluating my credentials and you don't have these same credentials, right? They don't have. And I have even posed this with companies. If you're a technical company that hires lots of engineers and scientists and technologists, why wouldn't you have someone who knows where we are? Maybe you went to school with us. Maybe you work with us at another organization and knows how we think. I always tell people, make sure that whatever you're doing, branding, marketing, whatever, make it general. And then for the engineers and the scientists, because we are not like the rest. And so it just is amazing to me that I've been doing this almost 10 years and I don't see any evolution yet. Nobody has figured this out. Instead, we've got artificial intelligence that's going to save the day. I said, I don't think a large number of recruiting folks understand you're going to lose your job. Do you know that? Do you understand that you're going to be replaced? Like, this is what they're trying to do. So it behooves you to both up your analytical skills and also be the type of person that was like, well, we can't let that person go because, you know, they have a wide network of folks. People love working with them. But like I said, some kind of way we've gotten to the point where it's almost like they're the police of corporate America. And they are kind of the police, if I think about it. They're the ones who always handle the bad news and all that stuff.
Yeah, and you're right, because, sorry to butt in, Erica, but the amount of times I've heard, oh God, here comes the fun police. HR are in the room. Shh, don't say anything. HR in the room. And I think that really does a disservice to the HR practitioners who are really good at their craft. And I want to give a shout out to one of my, a friend, a colleague, and probably one of the best HR chief people officers I know. Her name's Shannon Payne. And Shannon is strategic. So she has a seat at every executive table. She's worked for some amazing organizations. She is strategic. But you know what? She actually gives a shit. She cares about people along every part of the life cycle. I've seen her in action now at three different companies. I partner with her. She brings me in to help with stuff. But she gets it. And I think that that heart in HR has got to be recovered, because, you know, the process, the repeatable, scalable processes are going to be done by artificial intelligence, by machine learning, that kind of stuff. So what's left? What's left is the high emotion, the high EQ, and a higher cognitive load. So we really need people who are in touch with the organizational goals, as well as, and we are largely talking about people here, the people who do stuff. And when people are happy, they stay in their jobs. We know that an engaged workforce, a fully engaged workforce, this is Gallup studies, is 22% more productive. Now, I know productivity is not the be-all and end-all, but this is what the mindset shift is that needs to occur. Mel.
Yeah, so this matters, but I want to push back on where this is going a little bit, because engagement matters. It matters for your ability to recruit and your productivity. So all around, it matters for your bottom line and your long-term success, for sure. But HR does not have a ton of influence over how engaged employees are. Nor, I would argue, do they have much of the skill sets to create an engaged workforce. But in spaces like science and engineering, what you see is leaders, executive leaders, pushing anything that has to do with people over to HR. And it's a mistake. Erica, lay it on us.
I hear what you're saying about they don't have the influence, but they should. It's human. It's in the title. Who else is going to have the opportunity to drive company culture? It's not going to be the scientists. Please don't wait on us.
I do have to interject, because a guy I used to work with at one of the big banks, again, a heart-led leader who was an HR executive, he said, you know, Michelle, what HR really stands for? And I said, what's that, Steve? And he goes, human remains. Yes, because that's what we leave. I went, holy crap, man.
Well, what if in an alternative world, HR could be the place where, because, you know, we took out learning and development, so now you're on your own. But what if it could be the place, take all the regulatory stuff out. I'm not talking about the layoffs and the firings and all that. Take that stuff out. But if that could be a resource for employees, they're like, you know what, I kind of want to do something different, but I really don't know what the other jobs are. HR has all the jobs. They know where all the jobs are. They know the levels. They know what functions they report into. What if they could be a resource for folks who are trying to manage their career instead of being the police? Right now, like I said, you've done a lot of hiring of folks who that's why they like HR, right? They like being able to tell people what to do and have the authority of basically life and death in your career at that organization. But what if we switch that? Because something is going to have to change. Because to your point, Michelle, they're going to automate a lot of this stuff. And so to all the HR people who are always like, you're going to take the people out of HR. Is it the no response, the no email replies, or the phone calls that you don't return? Or
the automated rejections?
The automated rejection. Like, what exactly is the people part that you're referring to? What is the people part? So couldn't there be a revolution in all of this, and that, okay, we've been running it wrong for 30 years now, but here with technology, we can automate the mundane stuff, the stuff you're just doing repetitive work, and we can have some of these, because some of these folks, just like Michelle, remember when we got rid of the secretary pool? So it's coming. We know it's coming. You can bury your head in the sand, but it's coming. We're going to get rid. I don't even know what percentage of HR will be left. But couldn't the folks who really do have some skills, who really do have a heart for helping folks, as they say, couldn't we repurpose them or retrain them? I don't know what the title should be, but we're helping people do their best job. Hey, Mel, I heard that you had a hard time in the meeting. I just want to be a support for you, a coach. What can we do in our department to get you those skills that you know? Why can't it be that? Why can't it be that? I feel like that would be revolutionary.
Agreed. That it's a great question. So I want to take us back around to the recruiting aspect of it. So trends that we're seeing in recruiting, right? How is AI going to be applied to recruiting? Definitely resume screening. That's already been happening. Maybe candidate sourcing, AI going through databases, automating scheduling. And I want to talk about one of the things that I'm seeing that concerns me. And I went poking around on the SHRM website and I found this person, this vendor that's going to be presenting at their big major conference. And I had a look around. Yeah, I already had a look around.
I already know who it is.
What some of their service offerings are. And they offer something that they innocuously call video interviews. And the way that they position it is this, okay? I'm going to verbatim read how they're positioning this offering. Leave complicated scheduling, interview guide creation, and downloading apps behind. Give your candidates an easy, flexible experience to interview anytime, anywhere. Engage them where they are 24/7. So what is this? What this looks like is the candidate gets a question on their screen, and they have to turn a recording on, and a recording of them happens answering the question that gets submitted in. Now, I got some big feelings on this, but...
Oh, my God.
So what exactly are the humans going to be doing if the computers are doing all this? I'm pretty sure I know who this is, and they are problematic. I've written about them many, many times. That's not the worst of what they have, if it's who I think it is. They have, and I heard another institution separate from HR talking about this. They are now in order, well, we don't have DEI metrics anymore, but there's still some government reporting that folks have. You still have to report. So you may not have to adhere to getting a certain percentage in your workforce, but you still got to report it. That's not going away.
And I will say for those Australian listeners, we do have DEI metrics. So yeah, this is where, anyway, sorry, interjection.
No worries. So now they're going to triangulate your location and your name, and they're going to assign your race and gender. And that's what companies are going to use in order to report. Now, I was at a conference, when I talked to you guys last, and I told them, not only do I not give anything? You could even ask me, do I like cookies? And I'm not even checking that box. I'm not checking nothing because I don't know what organizations are doing with that data. And as long as you cannot guarantee me that you're not going to use this, because that data originally, that demographic data was to be sent to the federal government. That was not for companies to use for their own benefits. So now, with hacks and other things, you can't even tell me that my data is going to remain safe and private I'm not giving you anything, and I'm not encouraging anybody to also give it either. So you've done an end round around me. It's like, you don't have to give it to me. I have determined that you, based on your zip code and your school, which would be great. I'd love for them. They may get me on my last name, but I would love for them to assign who I am, because I live in a very non-diverse area. So if you try to extrapolate my schools and all that, you're going to get it wrong. But that's the latest thing that these HR techs are doing. They've already gotten in trouble, if it's who I think it is, for doing several things. What do you do with the recording? Who owns the recording? So I've now recorded myself and sent it to you. Who owns that?
This is highly problematic because of what are you going to do with that data? But I think at a human level, it's highly problematic as well. I'm being interviewed by artificial intelligence, and I don't have any opportunity to have that banter, that backwards and forwards. And I have advocated for the interview process to be much more engaging, to be less like, how do we catch them out, and more like, how do we bring out the greatness in this person? How do we understand this human opposite us even more? But also to recognize that that human is interviewing us. That human, the interview process is part of their due diligence on an organization, particularly when the hiring manager's in the interview process. So how does that occur? And again, is that what I want my brand to be associated with? No.
The example I have now, I don't know if this is in Australia, but all these retail companies decided, you know what? We're going to save lots of money. We're going to get rid of these cashiers. And we're going to have self-checkout. And then the people can check their own selves out. And look at all the money we're going to save. Walmart is like, oh no, we're not doing that. People were stealing left and right. So we're pulling out all those self-checkouts. They've moved things around on their floor plan for self-checkouts. And now they finally, 10 years later, figured out, wow, that was dumb.
Oh no, we have had a big wave of self-checkouts here. And not so recently, I mean, we have a bit of a duopoly when it comes to supermarkets here. And the supermarkets have installed cameras. So you're being filmed when you're checking out. And of course, I'm always looking, going, okay, so there's my image being taken again. Here's my shopping basket with everything that I buy. And of course, they've got my credit card details. They've got my frequent shopper details. There's data, data, data. I'm less concerned about them. Yay. Did I forget to chalk up 3 avocados instead of 2 avocados? I don't know, whatever. But they've got my data.
And that's what they really want. That's really what they want.
Of course it is. Of course it is. And I am complicit in it as well, because I want my frequent shopper points and all that kind of stuff. So, but I know I'm willingly giving my details because I know I'm going to get a benefit. If we come back to recruitment though, where is the candidate benefit from this? And again, where is, if you really think about the company's goals, wow, this is, it's contrary to everything we're trying to do to build trust, because when people trust organizations, they benefit.
Because we don't see HR as sales. That is a sales function. You are trying to both sell people on your organization to join it and keep them doing great jobs while they're there. And it's just like when they're laying off people, they're just numbers. They're just numbers. We'll get some more. And then it's like, no one wants to work, but no one wants to work.
There's some very clear calls to action here for both HR executives as well as business executives. And that is to say, and I'm going to pull on that thread there, Erica, your HR department is also part of the sales department. In fact, and this is what I teach in my programs. Yes, you are a growth leader. You are, everyone in the organization is responsible for growing the organization. But I'm not in sales. I go, yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. And the growth, so you've got to track where that is. But this is, yes, you're a growth leader. So executives, here's my question to you right now. Is your HR department, the entirety of it, is it enabled? Have you communicated? Do they understand? And are they acting in alignment with the strategic priorities and the brand goals of your organization for every part of the employee lifecycle, including for candidates. So think about that. I really want you to reflect on that right now. Is that happening? And if you think, I actually don't really know, you have to go and find out, because you have got a really big, big black spot here that needs to be understood a lot better.
I want to ask a question here for both of you about the oncoming AI. So there's this piece that comes up as both a benefit and a criticism of AI. So if you look in some places, it'll say that you can use AI for bias mitigation. AI tools can help mitigate unconscious bias in recruiting, anonymizing data, providing objective assessments, etc. But of course, it's also a criticism because the algorithms can inadvertently perpetuate biases that are in the data that they're pulling from and create a discriminatory action as a result anyway. So I'd just be curious to hear both of your thoughts on what do we do with that?
First, AI is not ready for prime time yet. I use ChatGPT and it was almost hilarious what they gave me back. I was like, are you testing me? So it's not ready for broad use. It's not. It's taking data from all the sources, but we know sources are both incorrect or certainly biased. So to turn that over to a group of folks who don't even have any analytical skills, and that's part of my concern and why several years ago I started saying, hey, I'm going to reach out to HR folks and teach them about HR technology so that both they can be secure in the jobs that they do and they not get sued. And what I was seeing is, and maybe things have slowed down a little bit, it was a lot of snake oil salespeople in HR technology selling black boxes. They were good at sales, selling to, I'll say, innocent HR people who really didn't know enough about what they should have known, and packaging things that they could do themselves for thousands of dollars. So one of the things I remember, one of the companies, all the candidates, so you have, let's say, 100 applicants, and you boil it down to 50. They're all good, but maybe they, you know, not as good in some areas. So what happens to those? You throw those away, right? You don't retain those and even keep these for 6 months and 12 months in case that position opens up again. You throw them away. They're gone forever, right? And then you haven't kept in touch with them. So even if you retain that information, you can't call someone else up and say, hey, it didn't work out. So will you come in now? So some of these HR techs were able to gather, I don't know how they did it, scrub, you know, they can scrub things from your database and your site. And they were resubmitting those folks for the job and packaging that as HR technology. And I was like, you do know you could do that yourself, right? You could keep that data for the folks who were second, third, fourth, fifth, whatever, and keep them warm. And if another position opens, you've already gone through their backgrounds and stuff. You already thought you liked them. They just may not have been the top choice. You can do that yourself. You can do that yourself. You do not need HR technology. So I'm concerned that you have a function in an organization that shouldn't be using. I mean, the ATS system has been around, what, 30 years? And they're still struggling with the ATS system, right? We don't know how to close out jobs when a person is hired. When a person is hired, all those people in the queue wanting to apply for this job should get an email saying this position has been filled. Thank you for your interest in this opportunity. We will keep your resume on file for 6 months. And if an opportunity should come available, we'd be happy to talk to you again. That is part of every ATS system. Don't tell me it's not. You just didn't want to pay for that module. So if we have not mastered the use of a system that has been in place for 30 plus years, what hope is there? Now they're going to understand algorithms? No. So my suggestion, this is my out of the box suggestion. We've got to revamp. HR now has to be a technical role. You have to have some technical ability, computer science, mathematics, engineering, maybe not science, because science people like to evaluate and study. But you have to have someone with some technical abilities in these jobs. Historically, HR jobs paid far less than engineer jobs. So it was difficult to get engineers to take those type of jobs. But I'm starting to see more companies start filling HR type roles with those folks. But more importantly than all of what I've said today, and always amazed at your brilliance, Michelle, is it really has to be a revolution. This is the time now to say, you know what? Okay, we messed up. We haven't been doing the things that we should have been doing, right? Let's get it together. And as the baby boomers ultimately leave, there's a few hanger-oners. And then certainly when Gen X leaves, I'm frightened because we haven't done any knowledge transfers. I know the baby boomers haven't done any knowledge transfers to millennials or Gen Zs. So all these things, Michelle, you've probably worked in operations and you know that equipment is held together with duct tape and bubble gum. And there's a man named Bubba who goes and kicks it every Tuesday to get it started. So what happens when you no longer know how to do that? What happens? Is that what we're seeing at Boeing? What happens when all that, as they say, tribal knowledge goes away? And now everything that young folks know is on Google or TikTok, or well, it won't be TikTok because they're going to ban TikTok. But this is the time now. You don't have a lot of time before, like I said, Gen X leaves and the few remaining baby boomers leave to start getting that information and rebuilding. It's like the $6 million man, bigger, faster, stronger. Why can't we have HR that is doing that? Like, oh my God, I want to work in HR. They do such cool things. Why can't we have that? You're going to need that. You're going to need that. The workforce is not getting simpler.
There needs to be a much stronger value proposition. When you were talking about ChatGPT, I'm a judge for a particular sports awards, really prestigious one here in Australia. And I'm looking through all of my entries and I'm going, ChatGPT, ChatGPT, ChatGPT. The language is so identifiable. There are certain phrases, and I mean, some people left in the quotation marks as well, which is a bit of a blue, but I think this comes to those analytical skills. So I have analytical skills, and this is why I'm a good judge, because I can analyze. And I went, I can see immediately that this has been written by ChatGPT. Now, do I have a problem with that? Absolutely not. Do I use ChatGPT? Yes, I do, to generate, give me 5 ideas for a blog, but then I go and write it because it actually gives me rubbish, really. I mean, this is what you can do in a structure, great, but the stuff it pumps out, including just for my own amusement, every now and then I say, please write a biography of Michelle Redfern of Australia. And oh, I'm amazed at the things that I've done. It's hilarious because it's absolute bullshit. I guess the point there is that that knowledge transfer, absolutely. The diversity of thought in HR teams, the diversity of skills in HR teams, you know, it's no longer enough for them to be the gatekeepers and police of stuff. We actually have to enable them. And when I'm saying we, executives, CEOs and executives, you must focus on your HR team. You must elevate your chief people officer or your HR director to your leadership table and really include them in both skill upskilling as well as access to the strategic and financial goals of the organization so that they can craft and curate and enable a department that is going to help your organization fly. And that includes finding the best and brightest talent to come and join your company and giving them a great experience from the first moment they read a job ad or they are contacted by a recruiter, from the very first moment.
So if we think about a revolution for just the recruitment piece, what does that look like? Even if it's just one improvement.
One improvement is to upskill those people in what the goals of the organization are and say you must. Your mindset and your everyday work must mirror what our objectives are. And again, executives, are your recruiters, both in-house and external, is your talent sourcing team working in alignment with your strategic goals for the organization? Go and ask them. What are the strategic goals of this organization? What do we want people to think and feel and hear about our organization? And is that threaded through every conversation, every email? Is our applicant tracking service mirroring that? Because you're right, Erica. Unsuccessful candidates will not be contacted. Oh, piss off. That is just ridiculous. So executives, ask yourself that now and then go and ask your teams. For me, that's the one thing, because you ask that and answer that question and the evolution / revolution will start to occur, because I think you're going to get a shock, executives.
Mine would be metrics, and I'm amazed how few HR departments have internal metrics that are meaningful. They have time to fill, which that really, I'm like, it should be immediately, right? Like, okay, you've got to put a number down. But we have a platform that we use for our virtual career fairs, and it allows the attendees to rank and rate the recruiters. I don't know if the recruiters realize that, but we have all those scores. And just recently, I had some information given to me about some recruiters, and I reached out and I told the company, I said, well, these are the ones you just may want to have a little word with them. I said, I haven't yet, but I'm going to go back and look at their scores. And if they're lowly rated, I'm going to come back to you and I'm going to let you know what their scores are. Beyond that, on my side, because I have got to protect my brand, I cannot have a brand that proclaims to support and assist folks being able to get a foot in the door in these organizations, and then the folks representing these organizations do not follow up. So what's going to happen is, for future events, those recruiters will not be able to register for our events. We just won't let them come. So you'll just have to find other ones. That's the only stick that we have, right? But I saw someone post a while ago, and it was an HR person who wrote the post, and they were quoting another HR person, and they were like, now we've got to keep up with quality of candidates. And I was like, have you not been doing that? Like, because to me, quality of candidates and how long they stand it up, that's something that you absolutely should be reporting back to leadership. And if you're telling me that that is a foreign concept and you have not been doing that, then that is part of the problem. So for me, Mel and I are both engineers. What do we need, Mel? We need numbers. We need data. We need information. So if I had to, in a perfect world, revolutionize, we've got to start measuring these folks. It can't be, well, you know, Susan, you're a really nice person, and I think you're just great. And that's what she gets at her annual review. It needs to be, okay, we've had 15 events. Of all the events you went, only 10 of the folks you talked to ended up making it through. What is the problem? What is the problem? We have to have time. Everyone else has metrics. Sales has metrics. R&D has metrics. Finance has metrics. Meaningful metrics. Let me clarify. Meaningful metrics, right? That's not a qualitative measurement, because you will just find anybody off the street just so you can get your number. Meaningful metrics. How long did the people that you interviewed stay on the job? Did they have performance issues? So that's, to me, if you're not going to start measuring what they're doing, nothing will ever change. And holding them accountable.
And I'm going to build on that as well, because I did a little exercise, you know, like not a huge sample size. For those who are about to shoot me down, don't at me. But I went to a range of my clients last year to say, tell me about how you measure, because my job with clients is primarily to help them close their leadership gender gap. So I said, tell me about the numbers, you know, when the long list. So of your candidates, how many are women and how many are men? Oh, we don't track that. WTF, we're not tracking one of the most basic measures. And I went, okay, so we actually aren't tracking the top of the funnel. The top of the funnel. So we can't take remedial action and go, well, what might we be doing, or could we do better to attract more women candidates? Because something is repelling them at the moment. Maybe. We don't know. Oh, we don't know? Right. Okay. So I totally agree. Metrics that matter. And again, this is the strategic alignment. Is HR helping grow your organization, executives?
Exactly. Or are they hindering your growth? Because the bad candidate experience doesn't just stay within getting a job. What if those people go to your customers? So they get jobs at your customers, and they do. And then when it's time to do business, they're like, I have to tell you this funny story. It's not quite related, but it's an empowering story. So a former colleague was mistreated, terribly mistreated, and she ended up at a potential client of her former employer. Let me just back up and say she's 6 feet tall, so you can't miss her. So huge project, $100 million project, and they're up for it. And they go and present to the company, the potential client. So she's on this team unbeknownst to them. And so she's the first one in the conference room. So she goes to the front desk to let them in. And like I said, she's 6 feet tall, so you can't say you didn't see her. So she goes to let them in, and her boss and several other people that she also had issues with almost passed out when they saw that she was not only at that company, she was on the decision. She was on the team making the decision about whether they were going to get this $100 million project. And she said the whole time, they were like you could just see the wheels turning, like, we should get up now because there is no way that if she is involved in the decision, we're going to get this business. She said, I would never do that. Whatever is best for the company, I'm going to do that. But the fact that I know that's what they were sitting there thinking is she's going to make sure. I said, I would have paid. I would have paid to be in that conference room. Don't worry about paying me for the day. I'm going to pay you because I would just love to have sat in that conference room. And I think, I always think about that. Like, you don't know how your recruiting decisions are rippling into other parts of how you do business, right? Maybe that's someone getting a job on Wall Street. They're an analyst. So now when it's time to review your company as a buy, sell, or hold, oh, definitely sell that. You don't want to keep that.
It reminds me of a saying, because, you know, I am a Gen X. So I've been in the workforce a long time. So I've heard some sayings, people. And one of early piece of career advice that I was given is, Michelle, just watch the toes that you step on the way up, because they'll be connected to the feet that kick you in the ass on the way back down. And that is a perfect example of it. So, and I think not everyone is going to be right for every job, but it doesn't mean they have to feel like rubbish as a result. And it doesn't mean that we don't treat them with care. And with protecting our brand, our image, our reputation. So this is such a big topic, Mel, and there's so much opportunity.
But if we get one, because listen, you know this, Michelle, companies are like, what are they doing over there? What we got to do? I was just telling somebody the other day, money, lawsuits, very little is a motivator for business anymore. The only thing that drives them without question is competition. If they find out that their competitors are doing some things that they're not doing or they don't know about yet, you can guarantee meetings will be held. So if we could just get just a teeny portion of folks to start doing things and oh gosh, what are they doing over there? They're so innovative. What an amazing company. I can guarantee their competitors are going to be like, even if it's not for the right reasons, right? Do it just so they won't be left out, right? I don't want to be the one company in this industry not doing it. That would be revolutionary.
Ooh, there's a lot there, Mel. Bring us home.
So many layers. This is a good place for us to wrap today. So we're talking about an HR revolution. That's what a bunch of our episodes really are going to be about. Today was recruitment. On some future episodes, I think we'll get into some things, go deeper on retention for sure, and look at some things like performance reviews and some of the other pieces that HR is responsible for. So thank you both, Michelle and Erica, for parsing through this sticky topic today.
We don't hardly have any opinions on this at all.
No, I know. I'm sorry that you've had to work so hard to get us to speak, Mel.
Thanks again, ladies. And thanks, listeners. We'll see you next time.
thank you for joining us for this episode of Lead to Soar. We sincerely appreciate your honest, positive reviews. You can leave questions at leadtosoar.com for Michelle and Mel to answer on future episodes. Until next time, we hope you'll use what you've learned here and lead to soar.